B'siyata d'shmaya, we're going to learn Eruvin daf mem zayin, and we're going to start four lines from the top of the Amud. Just to recap, on daf mem vav Amud base, we learnt that there were a number of guidelines that were said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Zeiri said one set of rules, and then we had Rabbi Yaakov Bar Idi said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan another set of rules as to what type of guidelines we have when there's an argument between the Chachomim who we follow. We had Rabbi Yehuda, when Rabbi Yehuda is arguing with Rabbi Meir, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. When Rabbi Yaisi is arguing with Rabbi Yehuda, the halacha is like Rabbi Yaisi. When Rabbi Shimon is arguing with Rabbi Yehuda, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. When Rabbi Yaisi argues with Rabbi Yehuda, again the halacha is like Rabbi Yaisi. That's what we saw in the previous Gemara. Rav Mesharshia on Daf Mem Vav Amud Beis, he totally disregarded these guidelines and said there are no guidelines and you have to measure up every case on its own when the halach is like this person, this chacham, when the halach is like this chacham. And we're trying to find some sources where Rav Mesharshia got this idea from that there are no guidelines. He must have had some proof, some cases where the guidelines were not met, and that would tell him there are no guidelines. And we already seen in the previous Gemara, we already had two attempts of different Mishnayos, where there was a machlekas in the first Mishnah. The Rav said the halacha was like Rabbi Shimon, even though Rabbi Yehuda argued with him. In the second Mishnah again, we had the Rav saying the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, even though Rabbi Yehuda argued. And if Rav is constantly saying the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, not like Rabbi Yehuda, that seems to contradict the guidelines that were said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that if Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda argue, the halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. And in both cases, the Gemara answered that the guidelines could be in place for when those cases where there is no clear halachic maskona, no clear halachic ruling. However, in all those cases where it's explicit, for example, these two cases where Rav said explicitly the halacha is like Rav Shimon, in those cases the halacha is like Rav Shimon. Any other case, you want to know what guidelines we have when nobody made a clear ruling, then we use those guidelines that we mentioned before. So we do not have a source yet that to teach us or to show Rav Mesharshia that indeed there are no rules. So now we're going to learn a third source. Says the Gemara, Elo mehadetnan. The source for Rav Mesharshia is from the following Mishnah. And this Mishnah is discussing a Ruvei Chatziris. Hameniach es beisai. If somebody, a typical chotza, has a courtyard, has a number of homes that are sharing the courtyard together, and one of the homeowners left for Shabbos, v'holach lishbois bo'ir acheres, he went to spend time in a different city, echod nochri v'echod Yisrael, irrespective of if that one person that left was a Yisrael or if it was a Gentile, Oyser lebnei chatzeris, since he did not join the Eruvei chatzeris, and he does own a home that shares or has a part in the chotzer, therefore it's as if the Eruv has not been made properly. An Eruv, the whole idea is an Eruv, of an Eruv chatzeris, is that you shouldn't carry from a bayis, a home that belongs to one owner, to a chotzer that belongs to multiple owners. So when you make an Eruv and everybody shares in some food, which is in just one house, it's as if they're all guests in that one house, and then, so to speak, the chotzer is attributed to that one house, and then you can carry from the homes to the chotzer and vice versa. If one person is not joining the Eruv, then again the chotzer belongs to two different entities. It belongs one entity to all those that made the Eruv, and they've all joined one entity, and then you've got this person that didn't join. You have two entities in the chotzer, and that's a problem. So here we're saying in this Mishnah that irrespective of whether it's Yisrael or a Goy, if they left town for Shabbos, Oyser Livnei Chatzeris, Divi Reb Meir. Reb Meir's opinion is that the Eruv Chatzeris is not valid and nobody there is allowed to carry from their homes to the Chotzer. Reb Yehuda Oymer, Eina Oysa. Reb Yehuda argues with Reb Meir and says that he does not restrict the people from carrying, since he's not in town. If he's not in town, it's as if he's, so to speak, for this Shabbos, given up his part in the home. he's not there, and therefore he does not stop all the other people joining and becoming one entity and then being allowed to carry in the chotzer. Rabbi Yossi says, Yisrael eino yoser. If the one that left was Yisrael, and the Yisrael that leaves typically cannot come back on Shabbos, he cannot travel from a different city back home on Shabbos, and therefore when he leaves, then for the duration of the entire Shabbos he's not here, and therefore the fact that he owns a home in this chotzer, says Rabbi Yossi, is not going to destroy the Eruv. However, mipnei she'ein derech Yisrael lovi b'Shabbos, because it's not common for Yisrael to travel from one city to the next on Shabbos. However, if it's a goy, and then a goy, even though he left before Shabbos, but he could easily come back on Shabbos, therefore his residence, if he doesn't join the Eruv, destroys the Eruv. Reb Shimon Oymer. Reb Shimon says, "Afilu iniach es beisai, v'holach lishbois etzal bitoi boisei ha'ir." Even if he left his home to go to his daughter's home in the same city, eino isa, since he's away for Shabbos, even though he's in the same city and he could come back, but since he's gone away and doesn't intend to come back, therefore he does not passel the eruv. Shekvar esiach daitoi, because he has no intentions of coming back for Shabbos. And we're going to see later on in the Gemara where we find this Mishnah, why there's a difference between whether this person, according to Reb Shimon, whether he's going to his daughter or he's going to his son. Says the Gemara, Va'omer of Choma bar Guri Omar Rav, again, Rav, relative regarding this Mishnah, said Halacha k'Reb Shimon. The Halacha is like Reb Shimon, even though Reb Meir argued with him. And whether the Reb Meir and Reb Shimon, who the Halacha is, that was a teiku in the Gemara on Daf Mem Vav. But besides for Reb Meir arguing with Reb Shimon, we have Reb Yossi and Reb Yehuda arguing with Reb Shimon. And according to the rules we saw before from Reb Yochanan, if you've got Reb Yossi or Reb Yehuda arguing with Reb Shimon, the Halacha is clearly not like Reb Shimon. The Halacha is actually like Reb Yossi. But Rav said the Halacha is like Reb Shimon. Uman paligale, who's arguing with Reb Shimon? Reb Yehuda. And it's not only Reb Yehuda, as we said, it's also Reb Yossi. V'ha'omras, did you not say before one of the guidelines you said was Reb Yehuda v'Reb Shimon halacha k'Reb Yehuda, that the halacha is like Reb Yehuda over Reb Shimon, and the halacha is also like Reb Yossi over Reb Yehuda, and therefore the halacha would be like Reb Yossi, certainly not like Reb Shimon. And Rav said the halacha was like Reb Shimon. So is this not proof to what Rav Masharshia said, that those guidelines are inaccurate? And even though they may have been said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, but we didn't accept them, and we'll soon see, Rashi brings later, that there's a chance that Rabbi Yochanan didn't even make these guidelines, it was others who said it in his name, but he didn't make them. Either way, do you not see from this Mishnah and the way Rav ruled like Rabbi Shimon against those guidelines? Says the Gemara, no. Umay kasha, no. It's not a question. That means even if there were guidelines, it's not a contradiction to what Rav said. Why? Dilma, hochanami heichad itmar itmar. Exactly as we've said in the two previous attempted sources, the same applies here. It's the third time we have Rav that's ruling against the guidelines. But at this point, the Gemara is assuming that the guidelines are intact for those cases where nobody made a final ruling. However, when Rav says that halacha is like Reb Shimon, then that halacha could be like Reb Shimon. If nobody says that halacha is like Reb Shimon, then we would not paskin like Reb Shimon. We would rule either like Reb Yehuda or even more like Reb Yossi. Elom mehadit nan. We're going to have a fourth Mishnah, which hopefully, or Reb Masharshi is going to try and bring proof from this Mishnah that there are no guidelines. Vezeu, says the Mishnah. Vezeu she'omru he'oni ma'orev baraglov. We've discussed previously at length, there are two ways, or we thought and assume there are two ways where a person can acquire his residence at the entrance of when Shabbos comes in, and that will be the center of his residence for Shabbos, and he can walk, not carry, he can walk 2,000 amis in any direction around him. How does a person determine where he is, where his center of residence is when Shabbos comes in? Most basic and straightforward will be where his feet are, which means where he is in person. Where you are, that becomes the center of your residence for Shabbos. If you're in a city, then the whole city is considered your residence and you get 2,000 amos around the city, either way, where you are. But we said there's another way of doing that. If you want to actually go travel on Shabbos towards the east, 4,000 amos, then where you are now has to be the furthest west of your Eruv, and you actually have to make the center of your residence 2,000 amos further east from where you are now. So how do you do that? You could go in person before Shabbos comes in, to go there 2,000 amos east, wait there till it's night, and then come back to your home, and then you can have 2,000 amos in any direction from where you were when Shabbos came in. But that's a very big bother, to have to go 2,000 amos just to be there when Shabbos comes in, just because some point later on Shabbos you want to walk 4,000 amos in that direction. So the Chachomim said, make an Eruv, send a shliach, an agent, take some food on your behalf, he'll go to that place, and he'll say on your behalf that this is, the food is representing this person, and this is considered his center of residence for Shabbos, and then this person can go 2,000 amos around where the Eruv is. That's what we learned till now. The question is, can anybody send a food item, or can anybody go there on their own? That these two methods of making an Eruv, or these two methods of acquiring residence in the halachas of Tchum, who do they apply to? So says the Mishnah, V'zeu she'omru, this that they said, ha'oni ma'orev baraglov, a poor man who does not have any food available to put for the Eruv, he can go and acquire his residence with his feet, which means he can go in person, and that way he will acquire his residence where he wants to be the center of his residence for Shabbos. Rav Meir Oimer, Rav Meir said, Onu ein lonu elo oni. Rav Meir held that only a poor man can make an Eruv that way, can go 2,000 amos away from his home before the onset of Shabbos, just be there till it becomes night, and then that will become the center of his residence. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, Echod oni ve'echod osher. Even a rich man who's got food, and he could have sent food to represent him, he could also go on his own if he wants to. Lo omru ma'arvin bepas, the Chachomim just said that you can use food to represent you. Elo lahokil ala osher. They only said it in order to make life easier for those who could afford the extra bit of food to send with the agent, but not to exclude. They didn't mean to say that only a poor man is allowed to go there in person. The rich man can also go there in person. Just why bother if you can send some food along with an agent? That was the machlokes in the Mishnah. Umasni lo Rav Chiya bar Ashi. Rav Chiya bar Ashi was teaching this Mishnah l'Chiya bar Rav, to Chiya, the son of Rav, kameid Rav, in the presence of Rav. Echod oni ve'echod osher, that both a rich man and a poor man are allowed to make use of this method of acquiring residence by going there and being there in person. Va'omar li Rav, and Rav, who heard Rav Chiya teaching his son Chiya this Mishnah, Rav said to him, Siyem Beinami, when you finish teaching my son, then teach him also that halacha k'Reb Yehuda. The halacha is like Reb Yehuda. The question is, why do you need to say, teach my son the halacha is like Reb Yehuda? Do we not have a rule across the board that when you've got Reb Yehuda and Reb Meir, the halacha is like Reb Yehuda? Those are one of the guidelines we learned on Daf Mem Vav Amud Beis. Why did Rav have to explicitly say, tell my son the halacha is like Reb Yehuda? Of course it's like Rav Yehuda. Tarati lomoli. Why do I need two statements? V'ha omrus. Did you not say already Rav Meir v'Rav Yehuda alocha k'Rav Yehuda? So we see from here, from the fact that Rav had to explicitly tell Chiya bar Ashi to tell his son, to tell Rav's son that alocha is like Rav Yehuda, it seems that the guidelines were not accepted. And this would be proof to Rav Meshar Ashiya. Says the Gemara Maikashiya, no. It could be that the guidelines are intact. And nonetheless, it was necessary for Rav to tell Chiya bar Ashi to teach Chiya, the son of Rav, that Aloch over here is like Reb Yehuda, not like Reb Meir, in spite of the fact that we already have the rule that Aloch is always like Reb Yehuda against Reb Meir. No, here it might be different. Answers the Gemara, or says the Gemara, my Kashya, I don't understand. Why is Rav Masharshia using this, again, Rav here, to disprove the guidelines set by Rabbi Yochanan? Dilma Rav, lesli, lehani kloli. This is the fourth time that we've seen Rav, that Rav seems to have not accepted those guidelines. Okay, so Rav didn't accept those guidelines, but Rabbi Yochanan did make those guidelines. Why is Rav Masharshia following Rav and assuming that we do not have these guidelines? He should be following Rabbi Yochanan and accepting the guidelines. Elo mehoditnan. We have now a fifth attempt to try and find a source that indeed these guidelines were not accepted. From the following Mishnah, Hayuvomo, we know this is the halacha of Yibum. What's the halacha of Yibum? Yibum says that if somebody was married and unfortunately they did not have children and the husband passed away, then in the event that the husband has a brother, there's a mitzvah in the Torah for the deceased man's brother to marry his deceased brother's wife. And that marriage is called Yibum. Normally, for a person to marry his brother's wife is seriously also, it's an Issachi of Chorus of Eishes Ach. However, in the case of Yibum, the Torah said that Eishes Ach does not apply, there's a mitzvah of Yibum. And this is going to be discussed at length in Maseches Yevamos. There are certain cases where Yibum would apply, but for whatever reason, good or bad, the couple do not want to get married to each other. So what do they have to do? The brother has a mitzvah to marry his deceased brother's wife. So he does, there's a ceremony called Chalitza, and we'll learn about it in Yevamos, but doing Chalitza is a way of severing those ties between the widow and her brother-in-law. And that way, he can then marry who he wants, and she can marry who she wants, and the Yibum is no longer getting in her way, is no longer stopping her from getting married. So it says here, the Hayivoma, this woman who's unfortunately lost her husband and they didn't have children, lo yisachloit v'lo yitiyabim. She's not allowed to do not chalitza and not Yibum, ad she yihulo shloisha chadoshim. She has to wait for 3 months after her husband's passing, and because it could be that just before her husband passed away, she became pregnant from him. And if she's now going to get married, let's say, for example, a month later she'll get married and do Yibum, she's going to marry her brother-in-law, and then 7 months after that, which is 8 months after her husband passed away, she's going to have a child, no one is going to know, is this a child born after 7 months from the second husband, or is this a child that's going to be born that really is from the first husband? And even worse than that, in the case that she's pregnant from the first husband and the child survives, is not a nephil, then she's not chayev to do Yibum. And if she does Yibum, it's a chiyuv of chorus. So either way, we cannot allow her to do Yibum all the while that we're not 100% sure that she's not pregnant from her previous husband. How can you know she's not pregnant? By waiting 3 months. If a woman is pregnant by 3 months, one can tell. So you have to wait for 3 months and then she can do Yibum or Chalitza. Now, the truth is, Chalitza she should have been able to do anyway. So there's a discussion why we don't let her do Chalitza even in the event she's pregnant. If she's pregnant, then so what? So she's done Chalitza. The maximum is it will become apparent that she never was a Yivoma and she never had to do Yibum because she was pregnant and she's going to have a child. And the chalitza is just was just a useless ceremony. But either way, we don't want her to do chalitza nor yibum before it's absolutely clear that she's actually chayev to do yibum. V'chol shara noshim, and so too, any woman that was previously married and either got divorced or the husbands died, lo yinosu, they should not marry, v'lo yis'arsu. Yis'arsu means that it's similar to what we would call today an engagement, but it's not accurate because the engagements we have today have almost no halachic ramifications at all or implications. It's just a ceremony. Sometimes they make a tnoim, but that's not more than a commitment to get married. It's actually not a start of the marriage process. The real marriage process is actually made of two stages. The first one being kiddushin, which just means that what we typically do under the chuppah, you give a ring and you say hariat mukudeshesli, and then they are mukudeshes. And she's an aishes ish. From that point on, she is considered married. However, she cannot become pregnant under the chuppah. When does a woman become pregnant? Only when she starts living with a husband, and that's the stage called nisuin. She says here that lo yinosu v'lo yisarsu, a woman who was previously married should not get married, and she should even not do just kiddushin, ad sheyu lohen shloisha chadashim, unless 3 months has passed since she left her previous husband, for the same reason as we said before. If she doesn't wait the 3 months, she may become pregnant, and then they will not know whether this child is a child of the second husband or a child of the first husband. Now, even though it's true that if she just does kiddushin, there wouldn't be a problem, as long as she doesn't do nisuin in the first 3 months from when she left her previous husband or from when her previous husband left her, as long as she doesn't do nisuin, then there will no longer be confusion regarding the child. But nonetheless, the Chachamim said, even kiddushin she should not do until 3 months is over. It doesn't matter if the previous marriage, the one that she's left, whether she entered that marriage having been married before or not having been married before. Echod almonois, ve'echod grushois. It makes no difference if she lost a husband because he died or because he divorced her. Echod arusois, ve'echod nesuois. Either way, it doesn't matter what their history is. If the history is arusois, the history is nesuois, the history is almona, grusha, whatever the circumstances are, the Tanakhama of this Mishnah hold that until 3 months, you're not allowed to do not nisuin and also not kiddushin. Reb Yehuda Omer, Reb Yehuda argues, Reb Yehuda says, nesuois, in the event that she was married to the previous husband, not just kiddushin, in which case she was probably not pregnant, but nesuois, if she was nesua to the previous husband, then those nesuois, she might be pregnant. And you want to know about that, then she's not allowed to do nisuin now to somebody else within 3 months. So that way it'll be clear, if she's pregnant, who the father of this child is. However, even if she was married nisuin to the previous husband, she can do kiddushin to the second husband, because that will not make her pregnant. And if she's not going to become pregnant from the second husband yet, as long as she doesn't do nisuin with the second husband until 3 months are over, then that's okay, says Rabbi Yehuda. Va'arusois, and if she was previously only mekudeshes to the previous husband, who she's now either divorced from or a widow from, then if she was only arusois, if she only did kiddushin, then yinosu, then she can get married straight away, even nisuin, because we know that if she's going to have a child 7 months later, we know it's not from the first husband, because she was never nisuin to the first husband, so she didn't become pregnant. And the only case where she's not allowed to get married immediately is chutz mi'arusa shebi Yehuda, and if she was previously what we would call engaged, if she'd previously done kiddushin to her first husband in the place of Yehuda, mipnei sheliboi gaspo, in that case, even after kiddushin, the chosn and the kala, the husband and the wife, were very familiar with each other, maybe a little bit too familiar, and therefore there's the risk that she could have become pregnant even though they had not done nisuin yet, and therefore in that place in Yehuda, even if she was just kiddushin to the first husband, she still has to wait the 3 months to verify that she's not pregnant. But everywhere else, where there's no liboi gaspo, then after erusin, there's no risk of her being pregnant, and therefore she can get married straight away, and we will know that the child she has is from her second husband, not from the first. Rabbi Yossi Omer, a third opinion. Rabbi Yossi says, kol anoshim yisorsu. Any woman, it doesn't matter what her previous state was, is allowed to do kiddushin even within 3 months, except for one case, chutz min almono mipnei ibul. However, if a woman, her previous husband died, and now she's in mourning, and because she's in mourning, she's not allowed to get married within the first 30 days of Avelus. And therefore, says Rabbi Yossi, besides for the first 30 days after the passing of her husband, the previous husband, any other woman is allowed to actually do kiddushin to a second husband, since the kiddushin to the second husband will not make her pregnant, and therefore we have no risks, and there's no reservations against doing that. Says the Gemara. That was the Mishnah. Says the Gemara of Amrinon, Rebbe Loza, Loyol Lebei Medrasha. At one point, Rebbe Loza did not come into the Beis HaMedrash. Ashkechele Rebbe Asi Davakoim. And Rebbe Loza met Rebbe Asi, who was in the Beis HaMedrash that day. Omar Leus, Rebbe Loza said to Rebbe Asi, Mai Omur Bebei Medrasha. What did they learn today in the Beis HaMedrash? Omar Leus, Rebbe Asi said, Hochi Omar Rebbe Yechanon. Our Rebbe Rebbe Yechanon, this is what he said. Rebbe Yechanon said, Halacha k'Rebbe Yossi. That halacha is like Rebbe Yossi, like we saw, that besides for somebody in mourning, a woman, it doesn't matter what happened to her previous husband, if she's in mourning for the first 30 days, she cannot get married. But if she's not in mourning, either she got divorced or it's after 30 days, then she's allowed to do kiddushin to a second, or receive kiddushin from a second husband. And that's what Rebbe Yechanon said. Now the Gemara is saying, why did Rabbi Yechanon have to say that halacha is like Rabbi Yossi? Rabbi Yechanon, you previously gave us guidelines and rules, and you yourself told us that when you have a machlokes between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, or Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir, then the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. Why did you have to say it again? So what do we deduce from here? Michlal, we can imply from here, the yichidah paligale, that the first opinion that's mentioned in that Mishnah is, and it's an opinion that also argues with Rabbi Yossi, then that's an opinion which belongs to an individual, not to the Chachomim. Because had it belonged to the Chachomim, that Rabbi Yechanan would have ruled like the Chachomim. And since it's not the Chachomim, it's just an individual. Who could that be? Or can we assume it's an individual? The Gemara says, of course you can. V'otanyan, I'll bring you Brisa to prove that, and we'll even understand who this individual is. If a woman kept running to her father's house, which meant she didn't spend time with her husband, but or there was some other issues between them, and they were not getting along, and they had no relations together. Or if her husband was very old or very sick, if she was very sick, or an akara, or if she couldn't have children, zakeno, if she was very old, ktano, if she was very young, va'ilonis, or another case of a woman that can't have children, v'she'ena ru'ya leilad, or for some other reason she cannot have children, or if her husband was not home at all, he was in jail, or if she miscarried after her previous husband passed away. In all these cases, they all have to wait 3 months, even though we know on a 100% level in all these cases that she's not pregnant. And this is the same as the first opinion, the Tanakama, the Mishnah we just saw, that said that it doesn't matter whether we know she's pregnant or not, she's not allowed to get married to anyone else, she has to wait 3 months. And the Chachomim made a gezeira. The Chachomim decreed, in order there should be no confusion, no second marriages before 3 months have passed since the termination of a previous marriage. Divrei Reb Meir, and here it says explicitly in the Braisa, this was the opinion of Reb Meir. Rabbi Yossi matir li'oris v'linose miyad. Rabbi Yossi says, not only can you do kiddushin to a second husband, but in these cases where we know she's not pregnant from the previous husband, she can even get married and do nisuin to the second husband. So we see here that the first opinion in the Mishnah was Rabbi Meir, and then we had the end of Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Yechanan told us that Loch is like Rabbi Yossi. Well, you, Rabbi Yechanan, said that when you have a machlokes, Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir, you said explicitly that Halacha was like Rabbi Yossi. Why did you have to tell us that Halacha was like Rabbi Yossi? Lomoli, ha'omros, did you, Rabbi Yechanan, yourself not say Rabbi Meir v'Rabbi Yossi, Halacha k'Rabbi Yossi? So why do you have to say it again here? So from here, it seems to be proof to what Rav Mesharshia said, that these guidelines that were quoted in the name of Rabbi Yochanan previously, Rabbi Yochanan didn't even say them, because he himself, so to speak, contradicted himself by saying that Halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. Says the Gemara, no. Well, my kasha, there's no question, it could be the guidelines are intact, and what Rabbi Yochanan said, the guidelines, those guidelines exist. And over here is different, and Rabbi Yochanan had to find it necessary to tell us that Halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. Why? Because besides for the guidelines Rabbi Yochanan said, we know something from Rav Nachman Omar Shmuel. The Omar Halacha K'Rav Meir B'Gzeiroisov. When it comes to the precautionary decrees, there the Halacha is always like Rav Meir. Over here, there's a precautionary decree that Rav Meir said that no woman should get married, a second marriage, without waiting 3 months. Maybe the Halacha is going to be like Rav Meir here, even though it contradicts the general rules that when you have a Machlekes Rav Yossi and Rav Meir, the Halacha is like Rav Yossi, but when it's talking about these precautionary decrees, the Halacha will be like Rav Meir, and the different rules apply. That's why Rabbi Yochanan had to say explicitly, no, even though it's Rav Meir, and we know that Halacha is usually like Rav Meir with these decrees, over here that Halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. So you cannot prove from what Rabbi Yochanan said that the rules, the guidelines that were quoted in his name were inaccurate. And if so, again, Rabbi Masharshid does not have a source to say that the guidelines were inaccurate. Says the Gemara, Elo Mehod de Tanya. This is another source that possible source to Rav Masharshia. Ela Mahod Tanya, we learnt in a brisa, and this is a brisa that discusses whether one is allowed to do business or to have transactions with goyim close to their holidays, and their holidays are associated with Avodah Zarah and things that we have no association to, and doing business with them then is something which the Chachomim did not allow. Hoylchin, however, says the Braisa, Hoylchin le'yurid shel nochrim, one's allowed to go to a fair, to where these goyim are selling their wares, v'loichim em behemon, you can buy from them animals, v'avodim, slaves, u'shvochis, maidservants, batim, sodis, u'kromim, homes, fields, and vineyards, you're allowed to buy from these goyim. V'koisav, one's allowed to write up, umale, and to record be'erkois shalahem in their non-Jewish courts, even though at those times one should not do any business with the goyim. No, mipnei shehu kamatzil miyodom, because it's similar to saving one's property from their hands. This is the only way that a Yisrael can actually secure his property and make sure that what's his and the transactions that he's made are actually final and binding and secure is by doing these things. And therefore he's allowed to do it because he's just saving his own property. Vim hoya kohen, if this person was a kohen, mitamei b'chutz l'oretz, even though a kohen has to be very careful to remain pure, not to become tomei, he's allowed to go to chutz l'oretz, even though chutz l'oretz makes a person tomei on some level, lodun, in order to litigate, ul'aririmoen, and to sue them in order to save his belongings. Ukashem shematami b'chutz l'aretz, in the same way as a kohen is allowed to make himself tomei by going to chutz l'aretz in order to save his property from the goyim, kach metamei b'beis hakvoros, he's also allowed to make himself tomei by going into a graveyard. Asks the Gemara, Beis HaKvoros Sol Kodaitoch, do you really think that your kohen would be allowed to go into a Beis HaKvoros and make himself Tomei in order to secure his properties? That can't be. It's a lav in the Torah. It's an explicit aveir in the Torah. Tomei doiraisahi. We wouldn't waver that, even if it's to save his property. Elo, what it means, doesn't mean the typical graveyard, which is definitely Tomei min HaTorah. Elo Beis HaPras Derabonon, and this is something which we've already discussed previously on Daf Chavov, that a Beis HaPras is a field where, biblically speaking, we can assume there's no grave there, but according to the Rabbonon, they had reason to believe that there could be some remnants of some bones there because the field had been dug up, and when they were digging up the field, they got too close to a place where there could have been a grave, and therefore the Chachomim did not really want Kohanim going into this Beis HaPras. However, in order to save his own property and secure his property, he was even allowed to go into a Beis HaPras. Umetame is also allowed to go to Chutz Loretz, Lisa Isha, in order to marry his wife, a woman, Velilmoy Torah, and if necessary, he can even go there to learn Torah. That's the Tanakhama of that Braisa. Omar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda said that that's only true Bizman She'ein Moitzi Lilmoit. A Kohen is only allowed to go to Chutz Loretz to learn Torah is if in Eretz Yisrael he cannot find somebody to teach him Torah. Avol Moitzi Lilmoit, but if you can find somebody to teach him Torah without having to become Tomei, Lo Yitamei, he's not allowed to become Tomei just because he wants to learn somewhere else. And that was the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yosi Aymer, Af Bizman She'moitzi Lilmoit Nami Yitamei. Even if he could find somebody theoretically to teach him Torah where he lives without having to make himself Tomei, he's allowed to make himself Tomei to go and learn with, to learn elsewhere, even if it means he's going to make himself Tomei on a rabbinical level, obviously, either by going to Chutz Loretz or the Beis HaPras. Why? What, how do we understand Rabbi Yosi? So Rabbi Yosi says, Lefi she'ein min ha'koil odom zoicha, because a person does not merit learning from anybody. It cannot be taken for granted that just because somebody is teaching Torah, that you can actually be his Talmud and learn from him. There's different styles of teaching, and Rashi says there are some Rebbes that are unique in being very short to the point and concise, and it's worth traveling further afield to such a Rebbe, even if it would mean an infringement of being Tomei on the rabbinical level. V'omer Rabbi Yosi. Rabbi Yosi added, Ma'isa b'Yosef ha'Kohen. There was an incident with Yosef who was a Kohen. Sheholach etzel Rabbi le'Tzaidon. He went to a place called Tzaidon, which was in Chutz Loretz, to learn Torah. Lilmoy Torah. V'omer Rabbi Yechanon. And here Rabbi Yechanon said, Halochak Rabbi Yosi. The halacha is like Rabbi Yosi. And here the question applies, like we said before. Who's Rabbi Yosi arguing? He's arguing Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yechanon, you yourself said before that the guidelines are, the rules are that Rabbi Yosi, the halacha is, when he's arguing with Rabbi Yehuda, the halacha follows Rabbi Yosi. So why did you have to explicitly say here, Om Rabbi Yechanon, the halacha is like Rabbi Yosi? V'lomoli. V'ha'omras Rabbi Yehuda v'Rabbi Yosi halacha k'Rabbi Yosi. Did you not tell us already once that those are the guidelines? So this seems to be proof to Rabbi Masharshia that these guidelines were never said by Rabbi Yechanon, and therefore Rabbi Yechanon in this particular case had to say that halacha is like Rabbi Yosi, but not that it's a rule across the board. And that would be proof to Rabbi Masharshia. Omer Abaya. Abaya says, no, itzrich. It could be that we need both. It could be that what Rabbi Yechanon made those guidelines are true. And nonetheless, Rabbi Yechanon had to say here that halacha is like Rabbi Yosi over Rabbi Yehuda. Why? Solkadaitach, I may have thought, that the guidelines are only accurate regarding those Tanoim mentioned in Mishnayos. And we know that Mishnayos were always very accurate, and therefore these are stable and guidelines that can be relied upon. Aval Babraisa, Eimeloi. Maybe when the discussion, when these Chachomim, these Tanoim are mentioned in a Braisa, and in a Braisa there's always a certain fear that it's not so accurate, maybe the rules would not apply. Kumash Malon, that's why Rabbi Yochanan had to tell us here, even though it's a Braisa, the halacha is like Rabbi Yosi, not like Rabbi Yehuda. But that doesn't contradict the fact that when it's a Mishnah, we don't need to explicitly say it. It's a guidelines across the board that the halacha is like Rabbi Yosi over Rabbi Yehuda. If so, we're back to our question. You, Rabbi Masharshia, you undermined the rules that Rabbi Yochanan told us. Where's your source? Where's your reason to undermine them? Elo hochi ka'omar, we have to assume that Rabbi Masharshia didn't totally undermine and disregard the guidelines that Rabbi Yochanan said. All he wanted to do was bring to our attention that there are those that did not accept these guidelines. Hani kloli lav divrei ha'kol ninu, they were not universally accepted. Not everyone agreed with them. Daharav lesli hani kloli, Rav did not agree with these rules, with these guidelines. As we saw a number of times before, it seems from Rav that he didn't follow the guidelines. However, Rabbi Yochanan argues with Rav, and Rabbi Masharshia will agree with that. He just brought to our attention that Rav did not accept those guidelines. Continues the Gemara. Omar of Yehuda Omar Shmuel. Now we have to backtrack a little bit. We saw in Daf Mem Hei that there was a discussion where the Heftze Hefker, ownerless items, whether wherever they are when Shabbos comes in, do they acquire residence where they are? And the implications of that are going to be that you're not allowed to remove an object beyond 2,000 amos from where it was when Shabbos came in. And we're talking now in the world, in the realm of Tchum. The other issues of carrying in Rishus HaRabim, those have to be taken care of independently. But a person, an object is not allowed to be moved more than 2,000 amos from where it was when Shabbos came in. Now, if the items belong to Yisrael, then wherever the Yisrael's tchum is, that's also the tchum of the objects, under in most circumstances. If they don't have any owners, if the objects have no owners, that was a discussion we saw previously on Daf Mem Hei, whether Heftze Hefker are Koine Shvisa or are not Koine Shvisa. If they're Koine Shvisa, the 2,000 amos they have were determined where they were when Shabbos came in. If they are not Koine Shvisa, then the first person that's, so to speak, going to acquire them is going to pick them up and take them. Then at that point, then the tchum of that person is what determines the tchum of these objects. Now the Gemara is going to discuss Heftze Nochri. What happens if you have objects belonging to a goy? So on the one hand, it's closer to Yisrael because it has an owner. It has an owner. So maybe in the same way as Yisrael, his objects are Koine Shvisa where the Yisrael is, maybe the objects of the goy are Koine Shvisa where the goy is. Or maybe we say no. It could be that the goy himself doesn't have Shvisa. Because Yisrael has Shvisa, where he was when Shabbos came in, or the food that represented him, whatever, however you're going to understand the Eruv, but where he was, acquired residence, and was fixed, and he could not go beyond 2,000 amos from that point. A goy doesn't have those halachas. So maybe in the same way as a goy himself has no Shvisa, has no residence that's fixed for Shabbos, so his items also don't. So that's going to be a discussion now. Heftze Nochri Ein Koinin Shvisa. That the Rabbi Yehuda Mashmuel said that objects belonging to a goy are not Koinin Shvisa. And therefore, if the goy moved the items that belong to the goy 2,000 amis on Shabbos, that doesn't mean that we have to view these items as having left their tchum and therefore you're not allowed to move them at all. No, they never had a tchum, and therefore the goy brought it, even if it's way more than 2,000 amos from where they were or from where the goy was when Shabbos came in, we don't have an issue with that. Asks the Gemara, Leman, according to what opinion is what Rav Yehuda Mashmuel said true? And we'll remember, we saw in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri actually says that Heftze Hefker are Koine Shvisa. The Chachamim say Heftze Hefker are not Koine Shvisa. The Gemara is now asking, according to the Chachomim we saw in the Mishnah previously, Pshita, then it's obvious that Heftze Nochri are not Koine Shvisa. It doesn't need to be said. Because Hashta Heftze Hefker Deles Lu'ubailim Ein Koine Shvisa, if the objects that have no owners, we say they are not Koine Shvisa, then obviously Heftze Nochri, the Isle Bailim, the objects belonging to Goyim, who these objects have owners, and their owners are clearly not bound by any residence, they have no Shvisa on Shabbos, of course the objects will not have Shvisa. Even objects that have no owners that are determining that there's no Shvisa, and nonetheless they don't have Shvisa, of course if they belong to owners, that the owners don't have Shvisa, of course, the objects are not going to have Shvisa. So according to the Chachomim, why was it necessary for you, Rav Yehuda Mashmuel, to say that Heftze Nochri Ein Koinin Shvisa? It goes without saying. Elo Alibad Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri. It must be that Rav Yehuda Mashmuel was following Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri. Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri said that Heftze Hefker do have Shvisa. They were coming to say, but Heftze Nochri, they are different, they do not have Shvisa. V'komashmalon, what are they coming to teach us? Eimer da'omer Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri koinim shvisa. When did Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri say that objects are koinim shvisa, they acquire residence where they are when Shabbos comes in? Hanamili cheftze hefker. That's only ownerless objects. D'les lu bailim. They don't have any owners. So we say you have no owner where you are. That's your residence. Aval chevtze anochri, but the objects belonging to a goy, de islu bailim, they belong to an owner that clearly has no shvisa, loy. Then their residence is exactly as bound and determined as their owners are, and the same way as their owners being goyim have no residence, so too these objects have no residence, and that's going to be the chiddush of Rabbi Yehuda Mashmuel. Consequent to holding of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Meisei asks the Gemara from a Braisa. Rabbi Shimon ben Elozo Oimer, Hashoil kli min hanochri b'yontav. If somebody borrows a utensil from a goy on yontav, from a goy who lives in the same city as he does, v'chein ha-mashil loy l'nochri kli me'erev yontav, or if Yisrael actually lends a utensil belonging to himself to a goy before Yom Tov, and the Ritva brings that she'ela is koina, that in this context, lending something to a goy gives it the status, as far as Tchum is concerned, gives it the status of utensils belonging to a goy. When Yom Tov came in, these utensils belonged to the goy, or were associated to the goy, and then the goy returned these utensils to the Yisrael in the middle of Shabbos, Vakelim Vahitzrais, or even ownerless utensils that were placed in storage, and you know, after having been abandoned and they have no owners, Sheshav Subatoicha Tchum, and these utensils, they were within the area of the Tchum of a city when Shabbos came in. Yeshlem Alpaim Amalokol Ruach. In all the above, the Kalim have 2,000 amois of Tchum. Based on where they were when Shabbos came in, v'nochri shehevi loy peiros michus letchum. However, if a goy brought fruits from outside the tchum into the tchum, hareze loy azizom mimekoyimam, then you're not allowed to move them at all, because in the first cases of Reb Shimon ben Elozo said, the first cases in the Braisa, they were cases where it was within the tchum, and therefore they were koina shvisa when Shabbos came in, according to Shimon ben Elazar, and they can go 2,000 amos in any direction. However, if the goy brought fruits that were outside the tchum, brought them into the tchum, or more accurately, the goy was more than 2,000 amos away from where he's brought the fruits, and he now took the fruits 2,000 amos away from where they were when Shabbos came in, then these fruits are considered as if they have left the tchum, and since they've left the tchum, you're not allowed to move them. You can't take them. So what do we see from here? You see from here that Cheftzei Nochri are Koina Shvisa. It's very clear, it's explicit. Otherwise there would be no problem of Tchum. And the whole Braisa seems to be telling us that they have 2,000 Amois. That means that they have Tchum. Cheftzei Nochri are Koina Shvisa. And that seems to be contrary to what we saw before. Says the Gemara. If so, ha'mani Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, then it's okay. Then this braisa is following Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri that says that cheftzei nochri are koina shvisa. And then when we said before that cheftzei nochri are not koina shvisa, that's going to have to be following the Rabbanon, the Chachomim. The Chachomim will say that Chefze Hefker are not Koina Shvisa, Chefze Nochri are not Koina Shvisa. We had a problem with that. If so, why did you have to tell us explicitly that Chefze Nochri are not Koina Shvisa? It's taken for granted. If Chefze Hefker are not Koina Shvisa, of course Chefze Nochri are Koina Shvisa. Therefore, the Gemara lent itself to say that it's Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says that Chefze Hefker are Koina Shvisa, but Cheftzei Nochri are not Koina Shvisa. But if Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri also holds that Cheftzei Nochri are not Koina Shvisa, that means nobody holds that Cheftzei Nochri are Koina Shvisa, then this braisa is not following any opinion. So the Gemara is saying, if in the event that those that said that Chefetz Nochri are not Koine Shvisa, is only the Chachomim, in which case it could be that Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, he'll say that the same way as Chefetz Hefker are Koine Shvisa, so too Chefetz Nochri are Koine Shvisa, then this braisa would be following Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, and that's okay. Eloi Omris Kasov Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, Chefetz Nochri ain't Koine Shvisa, based on what we saw a few moments ago, that even according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, Chefetz Nochri are not Koine Shvisa, how many? Loi Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, v'loi Rabbanon. Then this braisa, this Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, he's not following any of the Tanoim before him, not the Rabbanon, and not Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Says the Gemara, Lo'olam kasava Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, Chefetz Nochri Koine Shvisa. It must be that according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, not only Chefetz Hefker are Koine Shvisa, Chefetz Nochri, even though they have owners, they are, since the owners themselves do not have Shvisa, the Kalim themselves do not follow the owners, and therefore they themselves are Koine Shvisa, just like ownerless objects are Koine Shvisa. Or Shmuel, this that Shmuel said, that Chefetz Nochri is not Koine Shvisa, the Omar Rabbonon, he was saying it according to the Rabbonon. We asked a question that Uduka Omrus Rabbonon Pshita, if you're going to say that according to the Rabbonon it's so poshut, why did you Shmuel have to say that? If the Rabbonon say that even Chefetz Hefker are not Koine Shvisa, of course Chefetz Nochri are not going to be Koine Shvisa. No. Maldutem, I may have thought, Gezeira Bailim de Nochri, Otu Bailim de Yisrael. It's true that logic would dictate that if Chefetz Hefker are not Koine Shvisa, of course the Chefetz Nochri are not going to be Koine Shvisa. However, there is a difference between the two. Chefetz Nochri has owners. Chefetz Hefker do not have owners. So the Chachomim say, Chefetz Hefker are not Koine Shvisa. Okay, we can understand that. As soon as you say that Chefetz Nochri are not Koine Shvisa, then maybe we would think that people will make a mistake and they'll say that the same way as Chefetz Nochri, even though they have owners, they are not Koine Shvisa where they are when Shabbos came in, or where the owners are when Shabbos came in, which is a discussion, then I may have thought that people will make that mistake and think that even objects belonging to Yisrael are not Koine Shvisa when Shabbos comes in, and that would be a bad mistake. So in order to avoid such a mistake, we say Chefetz Nochri are Koine Shvisa, and you're not allowed to take the object out of their tchum of where they acquired their residence, so to speak, when Shabbos came in. Komash Malon, that was what Shmuel was being mechadish, that even though Chefetz Nochri have owners, they are not Koine Shvisa, and we're not concerned it will get confused with the object of a Yisrael who are Koine Shvisa when Shabbos comes in. Continues the Gemara. Reb Chiya bar Ovin, Omer Reb Yochanan, he argues with what Shmuel said before, and says explicitly, Chefetz Nochri Koinim Shvisa, that the objects belonging to a goy, they are Koine Shvisa. Why? Like we just said, the opposite of what Shmuel held, Gzeira Bailim de Nochri Otu Bailim de Yisrael. They were afraid, Reb Chiya was afraid, or Reb Yochanan was afraid, that if we're going to say that Chefetz Nochri are not Koine Shvisa, people will think that Chefetz Yisrael are not Koine Shvisa. They'll think that objects never have a residence. And therefore, we said that in order for people not to make that mistake, we're going to say that even Chefetz Nochri do acquire residence when Shabbos comes in. So, continues the Gemara, a related incident. Hanu divrei de'osu le'mavrachto. There were these rams that came to a place called, to a city called Mavrachto, and they came on Yom Tov. Their owners, the Goyim, brought these rams to this place called Mavrachto from outside the Tchum, from a place more than 2,000 Amis away. Sharaluhu Rava lebnei Mechuza, Rava, who was the Rav in a place called Mechuza, as we've seen many times already, and the people of Mechuza were visiting the place called Mavrachto on Yom Tov. Rava told his people of Mechuza, who are visiting Mavrachta, lemizvan minayu, you can buy these rams from the goyim who brought them. They didn't bring it especially for the Yisrael, but they brought it to this place called Mavrachta. Rava said, you people of Mechuzah can buy those rams, and then you can take them on Yom Tov back to Mechuzah. Mechuzah and Mavrachta were within 4,000 amos of each other, and therefore the Eruv Tchumin allowed them to commute between Mechuzah and Mavrachta. And Rava seemed to have no issue with the fact that these rams actually came from more than 2,000 amos from the residence that they had at the onset of Shabbos. Omale Ravina l'Rava. Ravina challenged Rava and said to him, "My daitche, what's your opinion?" The Omer of Yudah Mashmuel, Chevtzei Nochri, Ein Kainu Shvisa. Are you following what Shmuel said, that the objects, these rams that belong to a goy, they do not have any Shvisa, and therefore a goy can bring them from outside the tchum, it's not a problem, and a yid can purchase them, and as long as after the yid purchases them, after the Yisrael buys them, he then mustn't take it beyond his own tchum. But is he, Ravina asked Rava, is that what you're following? Is that what your ruling is based on? It's true that Shmuel said that Chevtzei Nochri are not Kaina Shvisa, but we saw Rabbi Yechanan argued and said Chevtzei Nochri is Kaina Shvisa. Why are you Rava following Shmuel and not Rabbi Yechanan? The Halacha should be like Rabbi Yechanan. V'omer v'chia bar avin omer Rabbi Yechanan, Chevtzei Nochri Kaina Shvisa. Gzeira Bailim de Nochru Otto Bailim de Yisrael. Rabbi Yechanan holds, because of this decree, we're afraid that people will get confused between objects belonging to Jewish owners and objects belonging to non-Jewish owners. We said that the objects of Goyim are Kaina Shvisa. So you, Rava, how could you allow the people of Mechuzah to take these rams out of Mavrachta and take them back to Mechuzah? These rams are out of the Tchum. Says the Gemara, Hodar Omar Rava. Rava agreed. He agreed with this refutation, and he changed his ruling. Rava said, "Lizvan lebnei Mavrachta." The people of Mavrachta, they are allowed to buy these rams. Why? Because, like we saw previously in the Mishnah, that Rabbi Gamliel held that even if something goes out of the tchum, if it's placed into an area that's circled, that's totally surrounded with mechitzas, then you're allowed to carry in that entire area, even though the area is outside the tchum, and even though it's larger than four amos. So Rava said that the people of Mavrachta, since Mavrachta itself was a city that's considered, or circled, or it was considered as, the whole Mavrachta was considered four amos, therefore, even though they came from outside the tchum, and even though Chevtzei Nochri do have Kaina Shvisa, and it's a problem if they come out of the Tchum, but since Mavrachta is considered a single unit of Dalet Amos, the people in Mavrachta can acquire them and use these animals. However, why do Kula Mavrachta leditu ka'arba Amos? Don't me, because the whole Mavrachta is considered four Amos. However, the people of Mechuzah that were visiting Mavrachta, even though Mechuzah and Mavrachta were within 4,000 amis of each other, and there was a tchum, however, the people of Mechuzah were not allowed to take these rams out of Mavrachta to Mechuzah, because Mavrachta itself is outside the tchum of these rams, and it's only because Mavrachta is considered a single entity of four amis that the people of Mavrachta were allowed to move them around in Mavrachta. But to take them out of Mavrachta is Osir, and that's how what Rava changed his ruling to. And Emir Tzashem, in the next year, we're going to continue from here.